hour number two of the program. Let's go to the phones where it's Don who's up next. Hello, Don.
Hey, John, Jenny, how y'all doing?
Doing well. And yourself?
Doing fine, thanks. Jonathan, I want to ask you, going to the COVID thing for the athletes, have you heard any discussion or any names mentioned of any of the baseball players who might be taking advantage of that extra year of eligibility?
Well, you have some this year that already have, and there are others that would have an option to return next year. Coach Vitello has said if they want to hang around, they're welcome to. So,
I think we'd all love to have them all back.
Yes. So
you say there's some that are actually playing the next year now? I didn't realize that.
Well, some would have had their – last year would have been the senior year for some, and so this year is essentially their COVID year. That gives them that opportunity to play it out, and there are others that would have, if it not been for last year, then they would have had their career end this year. So I do think it'll be interesting to see exactly who has the option to move on and start their pro careers. We've seen it highlighted that Will Heflin actually went through the senior day at Tennessee in 2019. He thought when he came off the mound in Chapel Hill in that NCAA regional that was going to be it, but got hurt last year, was just about ready to come back at the time that the curtain fell on everything. And so this year is another year in which he's been able to get out there and compete, and it's a year that he himself says could not have imagined being any better than it has been to this point, being a weekend starter, got married last November, earned his master's degree. He said it's been the greatest year of his life.
Well, he certainly has given us some great innings, no doubt about that. One more thing, and this is probably a superstition and perhaps something you can't even talk about or should not. But do you know what the story is between Tony and those three strips of tape that he puts on the railing?
Yes, that is one to where he can be spotted, but those are employed in how he signals to Josh Elander in the third base coach's box.
Interesting. I had no idea that it had a useful purpose. great. Well, I appreciate taking my call, and you guys have a great day.
Oh, sure do appreciate it, Don. You have a great night. Thank you very much. Let's go next to Steve. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Steve.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
I wanted to make a comment and then see if the AD is going to be on at 5:30. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. So yesterday afternoon, they announced that tickets, if available, would go on sale for the Super Regional at 8:30 this morning. And I started calling at 8:30, and I made about 200 to 300 calls on two phones between 8:30 and 9 o'clock when the ticket office put out a tweet that they were sold out, and never got through. And there was a number of people that responded to the ticket office tweet. Some of the people had called over 500 times in order to try to get tickets. So, that was a very clunky way to try to distribute tickets. And so what I'd like for you all to ask him about is, what was the process for distributing tickets for the game? And I understand that they're in high demand. But I think UT needs to be transparent because there's a lot of folks really upset that they sit there on the phone calling 300 or 400 or 500 times and never got through. What was the process for distributing tickets? How many tickets were actually available this morning for the general public?
I can answer that. That's 500.
500. Okay.
Yeah, I touched on that at the start. Danny White did mention that. There were not 4,000 tickets available. It was only 500, and here's why. So if you were a priority donor, if you were a season ticket holder, you got tickets. If you were the visiting team, you got 600 tickets, and there are 300 tickets given to students for free. That left 500 tickets that they put on sale. Now, one of the reasons that they did it, and I'm not sure if I can completely explain this, but one of the reasons they did phone only and they only allowed you to get 4 tickets per caller is to minimize scalper sales. So that's what was explained by Tom Setkoviak earlier today.
Okay. Well, I apologize for not listening when you all first started and you went over it. But, you know, I get it. If you're a season ticket holder, you should get first priority for those tickets. I mean, I totally get that. So what do they do? You said priority donors. Is that, you know, donors above a certain level? Because I've been a donor, a pretty good donor for 25 years, and I didn't get any opportunity to buy any tickets.
I don't know what that level is. Know the answer? I'm sorry. I do not know what that level is. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hate to miss it. I sure would like to be over there watching them. John, I envy you sitting up there in the box being able to see it. This is a historic weekend.
Yeah, this is a year to envy John Wilkerson. There have been some years prior to that you were not envious of his position.
Oh, I know that. I'm a huge Tennessee baseball fan. I don't get the many games. I live way over in Blount County, an hour away, but I listen to almost every game, and I really enjoyed, John, your calls. So I'm a little bit – I'm not divided this weekend. I went to undergraduate at Tennessee, and I went to grad school at LSU. And so I'm always pulling for LSU to be successful. But I'll be honest, the other night when they were playing Oregon, I didn't want to see LSU again. So I was really hoping Oregon would win. But go Vols, and I hope they do the same thing that they did to LSU back in March. Thank you, gentlemen, for answering my call.
Steve, sure do appreciate it, and so sorry for such a frustrating morning. I know a handful of people that had the exact same experience, and I really wish that there were tickets available for everybody that wanted to get in. And I know the process had to be not just frustrating, but incredibly frustrating, because I know people that did make literally hundreds of calls that did not get the chance to get them. As you talked about, Jimmy, it was an opportunity for season ticket holders to get their tickets, and season ticket holders were given an opportunity to buy additional tickets. And I just think that it is a shame that not everybody has a chance to get in that wanted to get in, because this might be the most demand that Tennessee baseball has ever had, including the 95 team.
Yeah, the Todd Helton years?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good problem. A problem, but a good problem. And you're glad that you had that. Now, how do you solve that problem? Mm-hmm. Well, let's add a few thousand seats over there, right? I mean, it's easy for me to say, but I think that would be helpful. John, you probably know this. Is the capacity at Lindsey Nelson Stadium versus the rest of the SEC, is it 10th, 12th, last? Do you know?
I would say that it is – I can only think of one other venue that would seat fewer and that seat less, and that would be Missouri.
Missouri, okay.
Because Kentucky just built a brand-new stadium within the last few years, and so I think everybody else, their attendance, or I should say their capacity, would be greater than Lindsey Nelson.
Yeah, and so they got to get that fixed, and that is a priority for Tennessee. I don't know how quick they can get it done. I know that we mentioned earlier that Danny White is going to start on a couple of projects at Neyland Stadium because they're going to be revenue producers, but I do expect them to start within the next year or so on Lindsey Nelson Stadium to expand it.
Yeah, I think the work should actually start Tuesday because we know there won't be baseball on Tuesday. But let's see. Let's go back to the phones where it's Mark who's up next. Hello, Mark.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Just fine. I know there's a lot of angst and concern about the tickets for the baseball series this weekend. But I went on the secondary market. They just looked at it. At 12:30, they were available on StubHub. So, upwards of $600 a piece.
How much a piece?
I think the highest value, I think, was $600 at that time.
Yeah, it's beyond ridiculous.
Yeah, but at least we have ESPN, the regular, so we can either the Deuce or ESPNU. We was fortunate to bring last weekend, and with John's great call on the Grand Slam. And anyway, they squeezed the man out of this situation, but that's fine. There'll be a payback for it sometime. But anyway, I thought that's interesting where the tickets are at. They're on the secondary market.
That's what Tennessee was trying to avoid And that tells me that the people that bought tickets this morning put them on the secondary market, right?
It looks that way to me.
Or the people that had season tickets had the opportunity to buy additional tickets, and they are perhaps some of those tickets.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those were arrangements that were made before today's on sale.
Say that again, John.
If you had your season ticket and you were a season ticket holder all season long, you had the opportunity to buy your tickets and buy additional tickets.
Right. Do you know how many additional?
I saw 8.
Okay.
Well, they were.
Which I think is a large number.
They were minimal. There were minimal quantities available for the Saturday and Sunday, and there was more available for Monday. Of course, that's kind of I hope it's not a Monday game. I hope it ends on Sunday with the Big Orange heading to Omaha.
Yes. And this will also create the huge early line for the standing room only tickets that'll go on sale 90 minutes before the first pitch.
And if you want to put me on hold back to the screen, I'll be glad to send a screenshot of this to you via text or an email, so that's some FYI to look at.
No, I have seen some of those. Some people have posted those, and so I don't doubt it for 1 minute that that's the secondary market is something that is set by the person who owns the ticket that's already purchased it, as opposed to some people at the start of the season were saying that was Tennessee charging that much for it, and that's not the case. But yes, the secondary market, some folks are going to make quite a bit if indeed they get the price they're looking for.
And just wonder how many counterfeiters are out there too. That's always a problem.
Yeah. And that's where you have to be doubly cautious when it comes to something that you buy outside of what would be the normal process. And I always hate it when there's this kind of demand, because one, I just hate that people who wanted the tickets so badly don't get the chance to get them right out of the chute. And then others that decide to go ahead and pay the secondary market price, there are always those that do find themselves dealing with somebody that has no scruples whatsoever and wind up being left holding the bag.
Right. All right. Well, hey, I hope it's a short series, 2 games, and Big Orange heading to Omaha. That's not a whole lot of problems right there.
That's for sure. Mark, really appreciate it. Go ahead, Jimmy.
John, I think that what has happened here is going to drive up the demand for season tickets next year for baseball, don't you? The success and the fact that if you want tickets, that's the way to get to is ensure yourself that you will for postseason. What do you think?
Yes. Yeah, I definitely think so. And it really was unfortunate that you started, and I mean, understandable that you started this year with the restrictions still in place in terms of available season tickets. It's what you dealt with at Neyland Stadium, what you dealt with at Thompson Bowling Arena for both the Vols and the Lady Vols, and for baseball and softball. And so it was a limited number. You were talking about 1,000 people to begin with. So you're right around 25% of capacity, if that much. And so those people that have had their foot in the door the entire season, they were indeed able to keep their seats. And some of them got moved around as the seating and capacity increased. Some find themselves nowhere near where their seats normally are. So I feel bad for those folks, but I sincerely wish that maybe perhaps the number that they made available to those that had season tickets, maybe that was too generous a number in terms of additional tickets they could buy, and I think that would have helped get more people in the stands that were really, really anxious to see the Super Regional this weekend.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yep.
Let's go next to Chet. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Chet.
Hey guys, good afternoon. Hey, I just wanted to a couple things. One, John, I've been listening to Tennessee baseball for quite some time. When I was in school, I think it was Rusty Enzer who was in some of my classes and obviously played back then, and especially as Tony has taken over. I don't miss many games, and of course the only way I have to listen to him is to listen to you, and I just want to tell you, you really do an outstanding job, and I just really appreciate it, because for me, being a baseball fan, in addition to others, you make the game really alive, like we're almost actually there, and just you are honing your craft, and you really do a great job on it. So that's just, first of all, thank you.
Appreciate that, Chet. Thank you very much. Vince and I have a blast doing the games.
Well, you guys, you work really well together. So I got a couple of questions. If I just go one and you answer and I'll go from there. I thought I heard Tony say in his post game, he was wondering if there was any way we could have picked or could have gotten more seats, stands, whatever it might have been, between when the games ended Sunday and the game starts Saturday. Do you know if there was any talk or opportunity for us to put additional seating in or around Lindsey Nelson?
I saw what he saw, and that what it looked to be available space to where you might have room for another set of bleachers like they put in beyond what was the end of the grandstand at third base. They put in the temporary bleachers, and it looked like you might have room for more bleachers between the end of the temporary bleachers and the foul pole. Now, I was over there today, have not seen anything that says they are indeed putting any more temporary bleachers there. I don't know that you could drop any in between what is the fence down the right field line and what is the hitting facility under Tennessee's baseball offices, because that area was utilized by the NCAA and its tournament operations. So I do think that there might be a little bit more there, but I also don't know in terms of what exactly the grounds crew has to leave open in terms of access, and they may not want people just breathing right down on top of what would be the opposing team's bullpen. So that, to me, looked to be the only other area where you could either move in a few more bleacher seats or what, but I haven't seen anything in terms of anything going up as of today.
Two other things real quick. One, do you guys have Mike Keith's call back in 2005? And I thought that was played at Lindsey Nelson, but evidently it wasn't for the Super Regional. And if you do have it at some point, could you play that? I just remember still hearing, because Mike lived down the street from me when I lived in Knoxville. And so I remember afterwards I'd see him out and like, hey, Mike, man, that was a phenomenal call. He goes, Chet, it literally just came out of my mouth. Just, you know, pack your bags, Ma. We're going to Omaha or whatever it was, something like that.
Yeah, that was the 95. That was the 95 season as opposed to the 05. But, yes.
Okay.
I think we have that somewhere. So
okay.
We'll see if we can drop that in at some point.
I appreciate you setting me straight on that. That's good. Yeah, that was a while back. Lastly, I was just going to ask you, since you've been doing this for quite some time, what do you see different now this year? I mean, obviously we're better, but we haven't won that many more games than we have in the past. And what do you think has drawn people to baseball? Because I've enjoyed baseball for a very long time and sat at Lindsey Nelson when I was in town to, you know, not tons of people. I mean, it was back in the 90s and the 2000s when we were a lot better. But I've never seen the stadium so full and just people so energetic. What do you see as the difference that has made that more almost football or basketball-esque like? Because, I mean, I think it's super exciting, but it's a tremendous change for the better. But I'm just wondering what your observations have been since you've seen it when people maybe weren't as excited and now they've gotten to this fever pitch now.
Well, I do think that there are a number of factors. And, Jimmy, when we spoke with Rod Delmonico as he was going into the Greater Knoxville Sports Hall of Fame, he and Coach Dickey talked about getting 5,000 fans in the stands, and they actually had to the fire marshal said nobody else can go in. They met that 5,000 number, and Coach Dickey was thrilled to tell Rod that he had hit that number. So I do think that when you have what's going on right now, one, first and foremost, it's a fantastic team. It's a team that's made up of great guys. It's a wonderful coaching staff. It's a very popular head coach. Jimmy, I think that first and foremost is why this team has been so embraced. They're ranked number two in the country in some polls, and they're just a fun team to follow. And then you add to that the fact that we did start the season with limited and restricted seating, just 1,000 people or so were all that you could have on hand. Well, now it's full capacity, and I think people are excited that the closer and closer we get to quote-unquote normal, that they can go out. And so that's a part of it. And then I also think that, unfortunately, the disaster that was this football season in the fall, where Tennessee was picked third, its highest predicted finish with Jeremy Pruitt as head coach, they started out 2-0 and then just won one more game the rest of the way. Basketball, such high expectations for the performance this season. And while you did get, I think, wonderful years by a couple of five-star freshmen that you really wanted to see play well, the team fell short of expectations. And so I just think that you've got a winner, you've got full capacity and the ability to go out and the freedom to do so, and a team, Jimmy, that is just worth supporting.
You hit on the things that I was going to talk about. The successful team, the lack of success with some other avenues, in particular football, the fact that COVID cut the season short last year and people are wanting to get out and do something and they want to support a winner. I think that they have grown with Tony Vitello and this team. I think that's all a factor. Look, this is a really good baseball town, and if you give them a reason to go, they will go. Not necessarily build it and they'll come, win and they will come. And that's what's happened. And so I think a lot of that, I think, John, everything you hit on is contributed to that. And I can see Tennessee having a lot of capacity crowds in the next few years under Tony Vitello's leadership, because I think that he will sustain this program if he's still here, hopefully.
Chet, we sure do appreciate it. I very much appreciate the kind word. Back to the phones we go. It's Rusty who joins us next. Hello, Rusty.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Hey, John, let me say first, I really appreciate you explaining how Tennessee was the home team in the SEC championship game. That was going to drive me nuts. But can you explain how they determine the home team in the regional and the super regional?
Yeah, it's you start with the better seed. Tennessee was going to be the home team in its first game, just as Duke was going to be the home team in its first game, 1-4, 2-3. And then from that point, it comes down to who's been the home team the least. So if Tennessee, for instance, Liberty was the home team against Duke in their second matchup. So Tennessee was the home team in the regional final. If Duke had eliminated Liberty in that second matchup, Tennessee was going to be the road team for a second straight game, because Duke would have been the home team less times than Tennessee. And if I'm not mistaken, the Super Regional will be Tennessee the home team for game one, LSU the home team for game two, and a coin toss for game three.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Because, Jimmy, even though we have host sites and teams that are hosting at their sites, it is still technically a neutral site.
Yeah, somehow.
Yes. In the eyes of the NCAA, that's why as we were able to fire a few questions at Coach Vitello today, he said that he would love nothing more than to have Rod Delmonico come throw out a first pitch this weekend as Tennessee hosts its first ever Super Regional. But this is not a Tennessee home game. It is an NCAA Super Regional, and that's why Tennessee can't have somebody like that throw out a first pitch.
Okay.
So now, if the NCAA, for instance, we talked with Alan Cockrell a couple years ago. Phil Garner did the same thing, where you have legends that can be on hand at a neutral site, like the SEC tournament, so they could do something like an NCAA or a College Baseball Hall of Famer come throw out a first pitch, but my guess is it would not be something that they would say, here is a Tennessee player to come throw out the first pitch in the Knoxville Regional. So it is a little goofy, and I fully understand that you're the host team, you're the top-seeded team, and why should you ever be the road team? But once you get into the regional, it's who has been the home team the least winds up that designation, or indeed it is a coin toss. And I would love to be there on hand just once, Jimmy, when there are, say, three teams remaining, and it's like, okay, here's the coin toss for Tennessee and Liberty, here's the coin toss for Liberty and Duke, here's the coin toss for Duke and Tennessee.
Yeah, really. So to clarify, what you're saying is they don't really have anybody that can throw out the first pitch. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's go next to Mark. You're on Sports Talk. Hello, Mark.
Hey, guys. I've just gone, you know, I was one of the season tickets. I've had season tickets over there since the 93 season. So I've had season tickets over there for 28 years. And, of course, with the reduced capacity this year, our seat location got changed because of the, you know, priority mm-hmm. levels and all. But we had great seats in the regional, and we've got some disappointing seat locations for the Supers. But in calling them, you know, I was able to get an explanation from them that donors that had not exercised their season ticket options for this year and had not purchased their full allotment of 8 tickets for this regionals are now exercising their option for their 8 seats.
for the super regionals. And so it's moving, it's causing things to move around. So yeah. Folks, donors that hadn't even been coming to the games are now buying tickets, which is causing a thing moving around. But I'm just glad to be in the stadium to see this thing going, because we've been there the whole time, and we've sat, you know, we lived through the Todd Raleigh years, and we sat through some unfulfilled years with Serrano. And that's the thing about it. We've had talent over there. It's just never been put together like this team and this culture that is there. We had hopes with previous coaches, and we saw the ups and downs in the Delmonico years. There were more ups than downs, I thought, but I'm really glad that Vitello and them has got them going. And I think Danny White ought to do everything he can, not just keep Tony, but to keep the staff in place. Because his staff.
And I think it's most important to Tony, exactly what you're talking about. I mean, I don't think there's any question that he would prefer to be taken care of, but he sees of equal import those that have been here every step of the way. And that's so unlike, I mean, you can go from baseball ops. Chad Zerker's actually here longer than Tony and his staff, but he does a great job. But then you look at those that came on board. Quentin Eberhardt, Frank Anderson was the first hire he made. And then Josh Elander and Ross Kivett. He does so much to highlight their importance to what the program is accomplishing. And that's why I think he wants them as much to be taken care of, as well as the commitment to the venue itself. And I do, I fully understand how it works with athletic departments and donors and season ticket holders. But I just think in a special circumstance like this, you keep them in the equation, but you take care of the season ticket holders, such as yourself. I mean, to have been on hand every season since the doors first opened, the gates first opened at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, I think that's something that should have you at the front of the line. And, you know, good on you that you appreciate just being in the stadium, because I know that's what – I mean, my wife's been a season ticket holder for more than 20 years, and that's all she wanted to know is that she had a seat. And so that's what she has. And she wishes now that perhaps she might have taken advantage of the opportunity to buy some extra seats so she could help out some friends who just had really frustrating mornings, because she would have had access to those tickets. But she wasn't thinking that. She was thinking, well, this will make tickets available for others to perhaps get in that weren't going to get in. And so, again, I fully appreciate donors and what they mean to the university, but I think that season ticket holders and those that have been in line and a part of baseball support for the longest time should have had first crack at it. Then you go with those that perhaps come in afterward that do what they have done and continue to do for the university. But, Mark, sure do appreciate it. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Look forward to being joined by John McClain of the Houston Chronicle in hour number three of the program, and, of course, the opportunity to catch up with Danny White, Tennessee Athletics Director. That'll be at 5:35.
And, John, I thought this was interesting. There's been a lot going back and forth between Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau.
Just a bit.
Just a little bit, and I've enjoyed it. I think it's fun. Koepka said that the feud is good for the game. He said that it's intensified the last few weeks. He said it's got people talking about it. It's got people interested. And he said it's good for the game. A lot of people feel like, quote, rivalries are good for whatever sport, basketball, football, baseball, whatever. And so now we got one brewing between DeChambeau and Koepka. And Koepka's like, yeah, this is good for the game, yeah. So I'm not sure what DeChambeau's position is on that. But Koepka could care less. At least that's the read I get from him. And so I think we might continue to see interesting exchanges between Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau.
Yeah, it's almost like a NASCAR flavor to the PGA.
Yeah.
And it really, just to see how many different variations of the eye roll from Koepka with DeChambeau in the background. We still haven't come close to the finish line in that regard, but that has been priceless. Again, just to see how many different either sports analogies have been placed in that or just world analogies, I think it is hilarious. And my guess is it won't go anywhere anytime soon unless one of the two just decides he wants no part of it.
That would be DeChambeau.
Yeah.
Because I think Koepka is kind of enjoying this a little bit. And, you know, he's got four majors to DeChambeau's one. And I think he's got a little bit of more room to brag.
Yeah, a little scoreboard action.
That's exactly right. So but I get a kick out of it. I kind of like reading. You never know what you're going to get from one or the other. So I think it's been kind of fun. Hey, I do want to mention this. There is a statement from the SEC. This involves the Autonomy 5 conference in today's Senate Commerce Committee hearing about name, image, and likeness legislation. We just got this from Herb Vincent, Media Relations from the SEC. The SEC has issued the following joint statement with the ACC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, the Pac-12, related to today's Senate Commerce Committee hearing. And here's the statement. The Autonomy 5 conferences thank Chair Maria Cantwell and Ranking Member Roger Wicker for today's hearing and their determination to set a fair and enforceable national standard on NIL. Only Congress can pass a national solution for student-athlete NIL rights. The patchwork of state laws that begins on July the 1st will disadvantage student-athletes in some states and create an unworkable system for others. As leaders in college athletics, we support extending NIL rights in a way that supports the educational opportunities of all student-athletes, including collegians in Olympic sports who comprise 80% of Team USA, who comprised 80% of Team USA at the Rio Games. We continue to work with Congress to develop a solution for NIL and expand opportunities. So I think they're right. I think they need to be on the same page. I just don't think it'll work if you got some states with some certain laws and other states with other laws, John.
Yeah, I still, for the life of me, because we've heard so much coverage, and it seems as one state after the next is getting in line. And I've also been really interested to see how different some of the state legislations or the state laws that are being put into effect are in some areas are so vastly different. I mean, you even had one, was it Georgia, where part of the money that was made by some students would be reallocated to others? I just thought that's some of the goofiest language I've seen.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, I don't think, I mean, for one thing that I've continued to question is, even though it's a state law, it doesn't mean that the NCAA has to recognize it, because they have their rules and their bylaws. Yeah. And if it violates their rules and bylaws, then it doesn't matter if it's legal in that state. It has to, you still, I mean, because membership in the NCAA is all voluntary. And for that reason, if you are a member of the NCAA, then you voluntarily agree to abide by their standards and regulations.
Well, that's a little bit like the marijuana issue that they face. Some states said they legalized marijuana, but there were still tests for marijuana at other states. And so the NCAA was not going to allow athletes in California and Colorado and other places to skirt positive tests for marijuana, while 30-some-odd or 40-some-odd other states did not make it legal. So you had to abide by the NCAA rules and regulations there.
Yeah, and the same thing for the NFL, NBA, and all that. Some have backed off of their testing as they react to the current landscape. But still, that was it at the start of it. It doesn't matter that it's legal in the state that you either play and or live. You still agree in your employee/athlete contract that you'll promise to abide by the rule book that's put forth by your respective conference and or league. And so I do think that at, sure, a snail's pace and perhaps a sundial's tempo, that the NCAA is moving in the right and proper direction. And it would be interesting to see what it all looks like when we finally get to that finish line, because I do think that we know it's coming. It's just a matter of what it will look like when it gets here and when will it get here.
I'm not opposed in concept, which is, I think, what you're saying, but I do have concerns about implementation, about fairness, about states having different rules. I think policing it is going to be a massive undertaking. So until they get all that worked out, I would rather not see them implement this.
I agree 100%. We'll get a break. Coming up, hour number three of Sports Talk, and it starts with our friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle as he joins us next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.